I haven't had a chance to look at that form yet. Is it just a simple form that is kind of the equivalent of what you would have, a taxpayer would have disclosed under 9469?
No.
Is it, so is it an amended return? It's not an amended return, is it?
It's not an amended return. It is basically a two-page form that's requiring that the taxpayer report all sorts of different information, specifically the adjustment type. So the IRS now wants to know on the form 15307 if the adjustment is an ordinary income item, if it's a capital gain or loss item, if it's a Section 1031 or 1231 gain or loss item, if it's an expense item, a deduction, or a tax credit. It also wants to know the timing of the adjustment. So is the adjustment permanent or is it temporary? It wants to know if there's any effect on a carryover item or any other carryover items. It wants a brief description of the disclosed item, which is really all that was typically required under 9469. And I think if you look at the IRS's comments, it was saying that the brief description the IRS was getting was inadequate. It was a two-word description, as we're going to talk about. That's very typical of disclosure statements that I see a lot of preparers making. In addition, Mary, it wants to know the overall increase or decrease to taxable income or tax credits. And it wants a, quote, detailed explanation of the item being disclosed, providing the necessary facts and circumstances to understand the nature and the implication of the disclosure.
So that it has to disclose the additional taxable income, is that what you said?
Correct. Exactly right.
So you are required.
Correct.
So a computation is required.
So in that respect, it is very similar to the amended return. It's just you're giving the auditor, because again, this is only applying to taxpayers who were historically under continuous audit. You're giving the auditor the adjustment before the audit, which is always occurring, actually officially occurs. Go ahead.
Yeah. But it's not so much information that you would have to amend your state returns. Is that the... Because I know that was a big... big corporations were concerned about their obsoleting Rev Proc 9469 because they'd have to...
amend.
The impact on state tax returns.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the rules are in Texas, but in New Jersey, we have what's known as a notice of change statute. So if we have an adjustment that occurs at the federal level, we're required in turn to file an amendment within 90 days, most typically.
But you wouldn't consider this to trigger that, would you?
I would not.
Yeah.
I think it's until you have a, quote, final determination. All this, I think, is doing is it's flagging the adjustment. I think that the adjustment doesn't become, quote, final until either there's an agreed-upon report, a notice of deficiency. However, the audit is ultimately closed. All right. Good question. Really good question. I want to shift focus now to elective disclosures. Because as I mentioned, Circular 230 requires that we as practitioners explain to clients the benefits of disclosing and the consequences of failing to disclose. So what are the two principal reasons that taxpayers would consider making an affirmative disclosure to the IRS, coming forward and disclosing certain facts or certain work product or certain attorney-client privileged information or certain privileged information under Section 7525? But why would a taxpayer come forward and volunteer that information? And the answer is really that there are two primary benefits. First, disclosure can be used to manage civil tax penalties. And second, disclosures can be used to manage statutes of limitation. All right. Before we look at the specific penalties that can be mitigated by use of disclosure statements, a question that I get or hope to get from a client is, doesn't the mere filing of the Form 8275 lead to an audit? Doesn't it trigger an audit? And I would say there is absolutely zero empirical evidence that the filing of a Form 8275 leads to an audit at all. I would say that in the entire time that I've been practicing and advising to file disclosure statements, which in the private sector is about 10 years, I've never had a client for which we filed an 8275 or the equivalent. And I've probably filed 50, give or take. Never had an audit occur as a result of filing a Form 8275. In fact, what we typically are able to do is cut off an otherwise longer statute of limitations, potentially 6 years, limit it to 3 years by virtue of making the disclosure, and know that we're going to have, if there's going to be a controversy, okay, we're bringing that controversy to a head at the earliest possible time. And many times, clients are capable of understanding, at least the clients that I'm dealing with most usually are capable of understanding, that there's a risk, that there is an uncertain tax position. And they're okay with being aggressive in terms of the reporting position. What they don't want is the penalty. And the penalty, the disclosure allows them to navigate that penalty, but it also allows them to avoid situations in which 6 years down the line, right? 8 years down the line after statute extensions and litigation, there are additional interest charges, right? So an additional benefit beyond managing the penalties, beyond managing the statutes of limitation, is bringing the controversy to a head at the earliest possible time, the collateral consequence of which is that you're going to reduce any interest that's ultimately due if there is an audit and an adjustment ultimately determined. All right. I said that disclosure can be used to manage civil tax penalties. The other point I think to note is there are definitely two schools of thought regarding disclosure statements. And some say that it's good to bring the disclosure statements, file the disclosure statements, bring the controversies to a head. And there's an entirely different school of thought that says, my tax return is the first offer to the government. I'm not disclosing anything. Let them figure it out in an audit lottery. Audit lotteries are at the lowest rate that they've been ever. And I'll take my chances with the audit. And that's okay. Go ahead.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You've got a situation that obviously there's an issue. It would give rise to a substantial understatement, right?
Yep.
Substantial understatement. Now, you want to penalty prove it, okay? So option one, if you got a more likely than not position, you can give an opinion, you can get out of that. Option two, you can disclose. So the question is this really the disclosure thing for that window between reasonable basis and more likely than not?
Yeah, and I would actually say it's for that window between reasonable basis and substantial authority. Because if you have reasonable basis for your position, you need to have reasonable basis, right? If you don't have reasonable basis, you're not signing a return.